Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Nataki Garrett, who took over as the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in 2019, only to see her inaugural season there disrupted by both the pandemic and the wildfires that ravaged the southern Oregon area. She, along with a number of other theater leaders and theater artists, has also become a vocal advocate for a new federal theater project that can help sustain the arts and arts workers through this difficult time. Now, as we approach the one-year mark of the theater industry's shutdown, Garrett is in the virtual studio with me to give us her argument in favor of a new deal for theater, as we all look forward to getting artists back in theaters and audiences back in seats. Hey, Nataki. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into some of the details of your advocacy work for federal support of theater workers, I wonder if first we could talk a little bit about the organization you run, because for people who maybe don't know a whole lot about it, it's pretty unique in terms of what theater companies are around the country. It's pretty much its own unique thing. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so Oregon Shakespeare Festival is an 85-year-old festival that historically has focused on the works of William Shakespeare in rotating repertory for about, 8 months out of the year. And so we have a calendar year season. We usually open in March and we close in October. And when you come, you can see something like, 8 shows over the course of a weekend. Over the course of a week, you might be able to see 10 shows. At least that's what it was like before the pandemic.
Right. And how many stages are there? There are four stages.
There are three paid stages and then one free stage called the Green Show Stage. Right. The most, of course, famous stage is the Shakespeare's, the Elizabethan, which is the only one of its kind in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sorry, go ahead. You were saying that people can see their, and so the season runs from, you said 8 months, right?
Yeah, 8 months out of the year, usually March to October. And so on top of the Shakespeare, though, we also produce musicals. We have for the last 8 years done through commissioning a whole lot of new plays. So Paula Vogel's Indecent, Lynn Nottage's Sweat. We did All the Way, which became a movie. So we actually do have a wide offering of different kinds of plays here at OSF.
Yeah. And what was going on back in March of 2020 when the pandemic hit, and what were the activities that all had to go on pause at that point?
So So our season starts, like I said, in March. Last year, it started on March 6th. Everything was closed by, of course, by that following Wednesday. So we opened 5 shows over the course of a week, and it was actually my very first time experiencing this at OSF. But there's a big kind of opening festival where you have dinners and people come, and it's people want to be here for the opening weekend. And we do these, you know, champagne toast celebrations at the end of each show. And so we had 5 shows open at the same time. And then they all sort of shut down over the course of the next week when we realized that that we were not going to be able to remain open. There was a call from the governor that said that we had to shut down because of the, you know, the amount of people that moved through our spaces. So 5 shows.
And there's a company of actors that work for that entire 8-month run in many cases, right? Because they appear in multiple shows and, you know, crew members and stuff work on multiple shows. It seems to me that working at OSF is a really interesting version of working at theater because it makes it clear that it can be kind of a long-term stable career for artists, not just in New York or Chicago or wherever, but anywhere that some, you know, a place like Ashland, where you can work at organizations like yours and make a real career out of that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, it kind of runs like Broadway. You have 10 months of work, and then you're off for 2. And we do have a number of returning actors that are, you know, a part of our acting company every single year. We do also audition every single year and bring in new actors into that acting company. But it is a really good gig, a really steady gig. And historically, the actors, actors have moved here, made their families here, put their kids through college through OSF. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty stable gig.
Yeah. And you took over the theater in 2019. And then, of course, 2020 happened. And where you are, life was not only upended by the pandemic and then the movement for social justice, but then there were also these wildfires that were kind of ravaging your area. So tell us about some of the ways that you found to sustain not just the organization, but also the community that the organization's in.
So a couple of things on that. You know, the fires were devastating. 2,400 dwellings were burned to the ground. Some will never be able to be rebuilt because they discovered the land that it was on you actually can't rebuild there. The other thing is, I think, really important is that, Ashland is really expensive. It's a resort town or a destination town. The neighborhoods that are actually affordable that are nearby were the ones that were ravaged in this fire, and a few of our company members lost their houses, their homes as well. We mobilized very quickly around that fire. You know, that Labor Day weekend would have been our fall opening if we were allowed to open, and we weren't, so we were lucky actually. And the next day that fire started, which was I think about a week to the day that my new executive director and his family had just moved to Ashland. Of course they were, really afraid because at some point the fire was a mile from our homes. When the fire shifted and it started moving north of us, our teams at OSF quickly mobilized to figure out how they could support, the city by providing shelter. We had, we had a food drive that happened right away. People automatically responded in this town by bringing food to OSF. Mm-hmm. And, by the afternoon, we had, tables full of resources for people if they couldn't get back to their houses because of the fires. And that actually went on for about 6 weeks after, we were able to really see what the real devastation of this area was. And then we still have people in our company housing that are fire victims. The beauty of it was I had just moved here. I feel like I keep feeling like I just moved here. but I really hadn't, I moved to OSF. I didn't really move to Ashland. Because that's the immensity of the job, is that you don't actually get to visit in the town that you're in. But I learned how integral we are to each other and how supportive this ecology is. You know, people showed up from Northern California all the way up to, you know, the mountains to the north of us. And they came down with truckloads of things to make sure that people in this area had the resources that they need. And so that was actually really heartening for me, especially, you know, we were at that point of the pandemic. This was in the middle of the social uprising that was happening in other cities. And, you know, and I'm, you know, walking into a Target and there are people without masks. And so I was starting to feel a little worried about this community. And then that fire, you know, unfortunately that fire hit. But what it taught me is, you know, the beauty of this community and how willing they were to support one another.
Mm, yeah. And right now, what's your understanding of the kind of federal support that your theater will receive? How do you anticipate the work that the government is doing right now, like on the level that it's working right now, to support what you were doing? And in what ways does it fall short of the some of the things you need as a theater?
So I have to say that the formerly known as the Save Our Stages, the SVOG, which tranched about $15 billion towards arts organizations and other organizations, is unprecedented. It's the largest granting cycle of that kind that to come from the federal government to directly to the arts. And so I just want to name that because it's important. You know, we fought for access to any kind of resources because we knew as a coalition of nonprofit theaters, a kind of loose coalition, that the only way for us to come back would be through that kind of funding. I think because it's unprecedented and because we are in a time that it's only the only time that's reflective in my understanding of history is the Great Depression. And so there has to be a federal response to bring back, you know, the arts is 4.6% GDP. You know, that we're talking about, you know, millions of jobs, millions of lives, millions of careers, millions of dollars in resources. We're talking about all of the other lobbies that rely so heavily on the arts, like the restaurants that are located adjacent to museums and theaters. We're talking about that sort of, again, how interdependent the whole ecology is. It was important for us, important enough in the state of Oregon that, you know, the groundwork for this for OSF was working with a group of multi-million dollar funded organizations who were all endowed to try to fight for access to CARES Act funding in the state of Oregon because there's no artistic tranche of money. And usually what happens in the state is, you know, if they're actually able to pull together some money for the arts, it's quickly co-opted by some of the other needs in the state. And so we fought for, you know, we got $8.8 million, which is also unprecedented. OSF itself received $4.7 million of that. It's important to note that OSF contributes about $120 million a year in revenue to this area. When we laid off 500 people in April of 2020, if you can imagine the ripple effects of laying off 500 people in a rural area like the Rogue Valley, that 5,000 people's lives are affected initially, and then 20,000 people's lives are affected over time because, you know, of all of the systems that are in place to support an organization of our size. And so bringing us back, it was really important to the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown. And so I use that same template to pull together that coalition of professional nonprofit theaters. There was an article in the New York Times a while back, and it was talking about how, you know, Great Britain was able to, the Prime Minister was allocating a certain amount of money towards the arts organizations. And in the article, it was like, if Oscar Eustace, Maria Goyanis, Joe Haj, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Audra McDonald all went up to Capitol Hill, they would be able to pull together legislation to be able to have access to resources. And so I called Maria Goyanis the next day and said, when do you want to get started? Let's go.
yeah, we should say for people who don't know, Maria is the artistic director of Woolly Mammoth in DC and was at the Public before that. And, what kind of cues do you take from, you mentioned, you know, the Depression and the Federal Theater Project, what sort of cues do you take from that in terms of what you envision that kind of support could look like and these new programs might look like?
Well, I think it's going to be pretty much the same. You know, the legislation did not in the New Deal and the Federal Theater Project in particular was to actually fund hiring people to create spaces for artistic endeavor. Part of that money was, you know, was literally to make sure that the buildings were built. And then some of that money was to hire the artist to go inside of the buildings and the administrators to make those work. And it was the sort of next leg of the regional theater movement. And then, of course, that was re-inspired much later in the 60s when the Ford Foundation decided to promote this idea of regional theaters. So I actually think something similar. I do know that, you know, theaters historically are not green spaces. You know, it takes a lot of materials. OSF is not a green space, not per se. We do have solar panels on our roof, but we're not green. You have to get into a car or a plane to get here, you know, so we're not green in that way. And then we use a lot of material resources to create the work that we do. So I'm hoping to be able to have access to be able to build a greener building, you know, where we do know that at some point OSF is going to have, because the Elizabethan Theater is outdoors. It's a 1200 seat Elizabethan style, Tudor style, really, theater. And with the smoke prevailing year over year, getting bigger, smoke season, we have a season now that we call smoke season. We are going to have to build a similar kind of building, but with a roof over it that maybe retracts or something. And hopefully we'll be able to do that with some of the infrastructure money. That's what we're fighting for, that.
Right. I'll have more with Nataki right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And now, here's more with the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Nataki Garrett. And how responsive so far has Washington been in your experience? What
Extremely.
Has been some of the activity? Oh yeah, tell us more.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, it's been extremely. So the march towards getting access to the SOS was revelatory for a lot of our theaters because OSF is a place where it's bipartisan. Every single person in the federal legislature and also in the state legislature at some point has come through here in high school or their family brought them down here over and over. They have a connection to this place. They have fond memories of OSF. So we were actually able to be in touch with our local and state legislators and our federal legislators, and really hear from them how important this is, you know, in the middle of the fight towards the SVOG and finalizing that package, that care package. We were hearing directly from all of the Congress offices about how they were fighting for it and what they were doing. And then, of course, when we got the resource, or when it was secured through SVOG, we thanked everybody for all of the support. So I actually think that for our theater, we're a little bit different than some of the other theaters across the United States, because we're integral to the economy in this valley. And so it's also we're sort of embedded in people's memories. We're an 85-year-old institution. So, some of those people remember coming when they were six. And so it was really important for them to secure resources for that memory. As the fight continues to make sure that we have access to those resources, and of course, we're in that phase where everybody's trying to figure out how they're going to have access to this large tranche of resource, it's incumbent upon theaters across the United States to make sure that you're in touch with your folks in the legislature to make sure that they understand that you can't actually continue to pursue possibilities in the future without access to some of this resource. So it taught us as an ecology that we could all work together and make something happen. The last thing I'll say about it is I was in a conversation the other day, and a really prominent artist, Jeremy O'Harris, was saying he's a playwright, but also he's writing for television and the like. And it was really important for him to acknowledge how necessary it is that we pay attention to what we're going to lose if we do not bring back the artist. The artists are actually the next focus of any work that we're doing. And that's part of why I wanted to make sure we secured some resource, because, you know, if we're not open, we can't pay anybody. But one of the things that he was saying that I thought was really important, and I'm bringing it into the way I'm rebuilding OSF, is that we have a generation that's, you know, sort of in between, that, you know, would have graduated from grad school or from whatever kind of training program that they were in, and now they're sort of in the wind, and we stand to lose those, you know, artistic minds who will be our future. And so we do have to figure out a way to sustain the artists at least through the closure, until we can get back to the business of making art.
What can people who are fans of theater and, you know, are eager to get back into seats to see some theater, what can they do to help support the movement?
I think the most important thing is, when a theater endeavors to even present the possibility of a season, applaud that. What did I say the other day? We're pragmatic and optimistic at the same time. You know, we just announced a season, you know, and that's an endeavor that's unto itself immense, because who knows if we're going to be able to open, you know, who really knows? And then if, you know, our theater decided to do for the very first time, we're doing a digital and a live season, because there are things that we know we can do in the digital sphere, at least while our venues are still closed, that we don't know if we're going to, you know, if we're going to have access to in the live sphere. And so we're moving towards the possibility of balancing both for the short term and also for the long term. So if you want to support the theater, if your theater has the resources, and the bandwidth to be able to put out the possibility of a season, proliferate that they're doing that, support them. And if they're in the process of trying to figure out what that might be, know that you have people in rooms all over a city, because they can't gather together in spaces to create those seasons. You have people in rooms all over a city trying to figure out what is the best formula to come back, to bring this art to you. And if you are inclined to support them in that process, then, you know, take out your checkbook and write them a check. If you are inclined to support the artists that are near you that you know are struggling to create work and they don't have access to resource, then do whatever you can to make sure that they do have access to resource. And if you feel inclined, call your folks on Capitol Hill and tell them how important the arts are. You know, if you're watching television tonight or a movie or, you know, watching Hamilton on Disney Plus, you know, that's the arts, you know, and so you put your action where your heart is. Right.
Yeah. And you led me into what was going to be my next question, which was to ask you to tell us a little bit about the season that you announced just recently that, as you mentioned, is kind of this balance between the kind of practical considerations of, you know, social distance theater and the hope that at some point later this calendar year, we can all find some way to be at a live event safely.
So I'm just going to pull out my little notes here so that I have it. So we have three live offerings. One is August Wilson's How I Learned What I Learned. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be directed by Tim Bond. Now, this is a one-person show that was written by August Wilson shortly before he passed on. We are lucky to have it because he only had a chosen select group of people who he gave permission to do this work. Mm-hmm. And so we have the Bay Area's Stephen Anthony Jones performing that amazing piece. Mm-hmm. And then we have a play called Unseen by Mona Mansour, which is going to be directed by our own Evren Atchikin, who is our associate artistic director. I asked Evren what play he wanted to do when we came back, as opposed to the associate artistic director is always sort of given the play, you know, do this play in a season. And I just asked him, like, where is his heart? And he said he wanted to do this particular play that he had been a part of the development of with Mona. And, you know, he's a long collaborative relationship with Mona Mansour. So it's a beautiful piece about, you know, post-traumatic experiences that are similar to wartime or insurrection. And how you come back from those. And then I'm directing Dominique Morisseau's Confederates. It's an American Revolution's play. It's part of that commissioning series, and it's a world premiere. And it's actually this beautiful piece that looks at Black women in 1865 and in present day, and sort of reflects on both. And then the last play of our live season is called It's Christmas Carol. and that's by some of our longtime favorite actors and writers, Mark Bedard, Britt Hinckley, and John Tufts. It's a comedy or a parody or an inversion of that age old classic. And it'll have every holiday at the end of the year, from Diwali all the way through Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and probably a few in between. And then digitally, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to ask what the timeline for those live performances are.
We don't know.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
They will be indoors theoretically when that is safe to happen.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly right. And we're releasing without dates because we think we're going to be ready to go in the fall. We're going to prepare as if we're going to go in the fall. We just don't know, you know, and it might mean that we only open one or two or three of them as opposed to all four. And then our digital season, though, is going to start sometime, I think next month. I don't remember now, but we're going to be showing some of our Oregon Shakespeare Festival favorites, our audience favorites. Manahatta by Mary Catherine Nagle. Julius Caesar, which was it's Shakespeare's play, but directed by Shanna Cooper, and then Snow and Midsummer by Frances Yachu Cowhig. And these are the first offerings of a series of offerings that'll be our shows on O. And then we have a couple of, like, you know, fun pieces that we're trying to figure out you know, all the things that O is capable of doing. And so we've created...
O is, sorry, we should clarify. O is the digital platform that you guys have created.
Yes.
For this, yeah.
That we created, that actually we started last year, but we were going to launch it this year. And the pandemic sort of upended it, and it became important to, you know, to start with that, to bridge our audiences, to keep them connected to what we were doing. So we have a project called the Cymbeline Project, which I conceived, but is created by and directed by Scarlett Kim. It's a serialized, episodic, cliffhangered Cymbeline that'll have any and how else do you do Cymbeline, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be anywhere between 5 to 8 episodes, and that'll be filmed in Ashland and Los Angeles and a couple of other cities. And then I don't know if you know this, but we produced a film last year.
I know a little bit about that, but tell us more.
So Sharifa Ali came to direct the play Copper Children by Karen Zacharias, and ended up creating a film called Ashland because, of course, everything shut down and Copper Children shut down. And I gave her a residency. Ashland is a little play that's about, you know, regenerating yourself and refinding yourself. I'm sorry, a little film about regenerating and refinding yourself. And it was presented by OSF, produced by Alalia Productions. It will have Oscar consideration because it was brought into the Pan-African Film Festival, which I think is going on this month. And it also made the city Ashland one of the best places to live and make a film, according to Movie Maker magazine. Sharifa Ali is returning to Ashland to create another film with us called You Go Girl. And I can't wait to see what she does with that one.
How do you think about, you're exploring all these things that, you know, you maybe wouldn't have otherwise. I'm guessing you probably would not have produced a film that if had the pandemic not hit and had, you know, the situation been what it was. How do you imagine all these new ways of working that you're exploring kind of continuing even once the live theater element gets back up and running?
Yeah. So, you know, O was never, was actually, you know, I conceived O, prior to COVID, while I was applying for the AD position, because I knew that OSF, because of its reach and number of, I think we had the in 2018 we had 70,000 attendees in a year, and so with that kind of reach, I was like, well, OSF is probably one of the only theaters that really could have a global reach, and so when the pandemic is over and when we're able to go back into our theaters, O is another stage. It's another place. And it's because, you know, we have nearly 10,000 views. We have reached nearly 60 countries. You know, we're on par with RSC in terms of our ability to make a global impact. And because of the paradigm shift of 2020, we ended up launching it before we had planned to, but we're going to use it as a platform to engage with the artists. You know, I asked Sharifa, you know, with this residency, what do you want to do? And Sharifa's response, Sharifa's a film, a stage director, but also works in VR and AR and other mediums. And I was like, so what do you want to do with this time that you're here? And Sharifa's response was the film Ashland. And I think the future of OSF, but I also think the future of theater has to place the artist at the center in that way. And I want to be able to respond in film, in serials, on stage, in plays, you know, in whatever, in all the multiplicity of ways in which the artist's heart can respond to the question, what do you want to do? Which is a very difficult question to answer.
Yeah. One of the things I feel like this time has also kind of made more prominent, or at least kind of highlighted, is the ways in which organizations like yours around the country have sort of banded together to either produce work or to advocate or, you know, engage in a number of activities to sort of support each other. And like, you know, with this network that you guys have helped to create, do you imagine that kind of collaborative sort of spirit continuing even beyond, you know, this time when things are so hard?
I do. And actually, I'll put it this way. Right as I received this position, several other artistic leaders emerged in their new positions. And I think there's a generational difference in terms of the way that we think about how you come together, what collaboration is, and why it's necessary. Collective action is at the center of the work that we do. And yet, you know, my predecessors actually worked at sort of creating little fiefdoms. And so the beautiful thing about my colleagues that are, you know, now in these positions of leadership is that we all came trained in the same way, that collective action is actually at the center of what we do. And so, you know, I worked with Maria Goyanis, Joe Hodge, Diane Paulus, and the artistic director at the Theater Playco. I worked with all of those theaters, and we produced a Zoom play called This Is Who I Am, which was originally produced by, it was going to only be produced by Woolly Mammoth and Playco, and they decided to bring the rest of us on. So that kind of response is what's needed in order to make sure that the field emerges. Part of the reason why I fought for that federal funding is OSF is heavily resourced. It was either going to survive the pandemic or it wasn't. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, we have a sizable endowment. If we couldn't make it through, it was because we weren't needed, right? But if we made it through when we were needed, my response is that necessity that we provide to the field is to make sure that the rest of the field actually also survives, that we survive in an ecology, and that we actually have to move together in order for us to grow together. And that's really, I think, the future of this art. And I have some colleagues who don't agree and who are very kind of still cloistered, and they want to work on what they want to work on by themselves. I just don't happen to be that person. I really do respond better in collaborative spaces. And I actually think that our theaters grow better in collaborative spaces. So I was just on a national phone call with a few of my colleagues, and we were talking about, their question was like, how did you release and what did you do and what are you doing? And I gave them all the information I could. And, you know, and we decided that we're going to work together to make sure that our shared donors and our shared board members, you know, that they know how hard it is and how we're working all together in order to bring our theaters forward. Because it's important that our donors and our board members understand, and our patrons understand that we're sort of like Adrienne Marie Brown in Emergent Strategy talks about the sort of mushrooms, you know, and how they sort of are all connected underneath. You know, we're a network in that same way, and we're all actually connected underneath.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to wrap this up. Thank you so much for chatting with me, and we look forward to seeing what comes next from you at OSF and from all your collaborators around the country. And it is, we should say that the that O is now accessible to people, you know, like me who are based in Brooklyn and can't make it to Ashland every year. So that is a way to see some of your work that maybe we didn't have before.
Yes, come one, come all, come on over to OSF. I'm putting a door in your living room right now that you just have to open and come through.
Right. I look forward to it. Thanks so much, Nataki.
Thank you very much, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
That was Nataki Garrett, the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The theater's first streaming production of 2021, Julius Caesar, is now streaming through March 27th. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. You can find past episodes, or subscribe, on Apple Podcasts and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is another great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat, and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.